right now, I want to bring up to the microphone Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. The Summit County Council meeting tomorrow, starting in work session at 3:10. They'll be meeting at the Sheldon Richens Building. So good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So with regard to the Camas Services Building, there were no details in the county packet, but we're talking about climate action items. So what is it that we want to add to affect the building's budget here?
Well, I mean, the council has expressed along the way, and you know, it goes back to when this building was first put into our budget. It wasn't really, we didn't have our climate action plan in place and some of our sustainability goals. So as we've gone through the process, we are at the architectural decision point where we need to make some decisions about whether we add certain things to the building that would make it more sustainable in the future and meet our climate action goals, or whether we march on with the budget that we have. So that's exactly where we're at, and we need to get some direction from the council on whether we support some of those things within the budget.
Yeah, how much are we talking about?
I'm not sure of the dollar amount. I think it's going to be a menu of items that we can pick from, and then look at our overall capital budget and see if we can fit those in. And we'll hear about that tomorrow.
All right. And so what are the items, some of the items we're considering, like putting solar panels on? Or
it could be that. It could be a difference in different heating and cooling systems and how much energy they use. It could be some architectural details that deal with more passive solar versus not, or insulation levels. I mean, all the different things that seal up a building and make it more energy efficient.
All right. Also, possible revenues for transit projects. This is the second installment of that discussion. We're having a review from Deputy County Attorney Dave Thomas. So it's going to look at public noticing, or whether public elections are required for these options?
Yeah, what it's really looking at. So last week we looked at, you know, what are the mechanisms that we could use to raise revenue or finance different types of transportation needs that we have in the community. And what possible revenue those could bring in. Now we're looking at, okay, if you've picked one, council, how do you implement it? And so we're just trying to step through this education of the council and the public, so that when we get to the point where we can mix all of that stuff together with a possible list of transportation projects, how do we get to actually doing it sometime in order to affect our future budgets?
All right. So some of the options that the county council looking at, adding another sales tax for mass transit, taking the sales tax we have now in the West County and extending it to the East County, the new 0.25% sales tax, which is a statewide deal. And then a property tax.
There is a property tax mechanism that we currently don't take advantage of within the designated transit district. At the end of the day, the council is going to need to weigh out, you know, what is it they need to, what do they want to provide in transportation options in the future? What revenue do they need to support that? That's probably going to drive where we go. But as you can tell with each option, if you read through the packet, each one has some restrictions. Some can only be used on transit. Some can only be used on capital and right of way. So there's some decisions to be made within all of these options.
Yeah, the 0.25% sales tax that would be statewide. Have we kind of dropped this out of the
No, running? that's still in the mix. It doesn't produce the most revenue of the options, so it may not provide as much flexibility. But there's also some variability within the legislature going on with that this year that all of our entities are looking at. They're trying to make some decisions about the transit side of that, about whether it's flexible, how much it needs to go to transit or not. Those are some of the bills that are being bantered around right now.
And is it possible to do more than one, both a property and a sales tax
increase?
It
certainly is. I think that all depends on what the community will support in transportation projects we need to do.
So first we need to get that wish list complete, right?
Well,
so
that's one of the items, and then we need to throw that into the whole mix of what the options are and see what boils to the top.
All right. A discussion with regard to the Public Lands Initiative. It looks like the staff is recommending that the county council submit a resolution that it cannot support Rob Bishop's PLI draft, and that the county resubmits its original proposal that was worked out with stakeholders. So the report in the packet details differences between the county's proposal and Bishop's proposal. Is there one that kind of rises to the top there?
Well, I think if you go back to the original proposal that the council put forward, I think that's still the preferred way of going about it. I think what, you know, Kim Carson and Dave Ure pulled a very eclectic group together to work on this. And they worked very closely together and came to consensus on what that initiative should look like from the county's point of view. And so Kim has pulled that same group together to reanalyze what came out of the legislation. And, of course, legislation, when it mixed together a lot of different viewpoints from a lot of different counties, doesn't always there's that sausage-making process that goes into that. So we're going to re-represent. We would suggest to the council that they re-represent their original desires in that, which strongly talk towards the watershed management piece of providing wilderness. And I think that's where it's going to go.
Yeah. I mean, this is really, it's a compromise, though. I mean, and the county can't expect that it's going to get everything it wants. No,
no, of course. All lawmaking is a compromise process. However, that doesn't mean that you don't strongly represent your position.
Okay. Let's see. And also a tax exemption for Nuzzles and Co. Besides the exemption, the county also considering a general policy that when an exempt entity changes their name?
So this is kind of an anomaly situation that has come up in the last few months with the assessor where a nonprofit has changed its name through and done that on deeds to property that the former nonprofit owned, but there was no notice that the name change meant that it was still the same nonprofit. The assessor is having a conversation with the council about, you know, as these things don't come up for very, very often, but if they notice the difference and know that it should not be that it should remain tax exempt because it's the same property, same nonprofit, just a different name. Can they handle that administratively within their office, or does the applicant need to make application to the council? So that's the basics of the discussion.
All right. And Wednesday, February 10th, it's Jason Bartow Day, being named, the state arborist?
Absolutely. And he was named as the Utah Arborist of the Year. For 2015, and we're very proud of that, and would like to recognize Jason for that.
Great. Finally, a two-hour transportation open house. This is taking place at the Swanner Eco Center. What information is going to be on hand for this event?
Well, basically, we're going to be talking about all modes of transportation, and really just starting. This is another part of the beginning of our process of building and leading on a Summit County Transportation Master Plan that will take us out 25 years. And so that we can start really working with our federal and state partners to bring some solutions to the county that will help us and provide a guide for the county in the future on how perhaps we need to have revenue to do transportation projects. A lot of free food will be there from 6 to 8 p.m. at Swanner. You know, if you're pleased with the transportation system, come out and tell us that. If you've got some criticism about it, come out and tell us that as well.
All right. So, I mean, are we going to have, like, different stations, or is it going to be one big presentation?
There will be different stations that people will be manning. We'll have a lot of our partners involved with this as well. And then there will also be feedback kiosk that we'll have available so that people can easily give us some suggestions or criticism on the system that they have.
So are we talking just countywide? Basin-wide, but Park City and?
County-wide.
Okay. All right, so an opportunity for everybody. You going to have more of these then in Camas and Colville?
These will be all throughout the process throughout the year as we go through this process of building this plan.
All right, Tom, anything else?
That's it.
All right, thanks for coming in. Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. News time now, 8:25. 8:26 now. Welcome back. Day number two of the KPCW Pledge Drive. I'm Leslie Thatcher along with Emily Elliott and working on a big old challenge grant from Vail Epic Promise. In the studio with us, Tom Pettigrew and Beth Lohman helping KPCW raise money. And we had a bunch of phone calls. Let's start with the thank yous first.
Sure. We've got Tom and Sally Olson, and they're say thanks for public servants for protecting our community. Thanks, Tom. Sally.
Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow starting at 5:30 in the City Council Chambers. In the studio to review the agenda, I have Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson along with Staff Planner Kirsten Whetstone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first on the agenda, Bruce, an update on transportation. Can you give us the Reader's Digest version of this?
Well, there is no Reader's Digest version of this, Leslie, but Alfred Knotts, our transportation director, has been working hard with UDOT and Summit County to coordinate bringing forward some various programs, trip generation modeling so we know where the trips are, some congestion modeling, resetting some of the lights so that we don't have congestion at the lights, transportation demand management, which means affecting people's schedules going to work. So he's got a number of plans going forward. This is the same briefing that he gave to the Planning Commission in January.
Okay.
So we're just giving them the update.
An update. Okay. And is it? Are you also part of then tomorrow's transportation open house, or that's Summit County's handling that?
Summit County, but Alfred will be there as well to make sure that we're completely coordinated with the county on all these matters.
Okay. Any idea about the future then of Richardson Flat, what we do with that?
Richardson Flat is part of our conversation, and how do we get that working out there? Who gets to use it? Do we do any other land use changes? Alfred is looking at some intersection changes on 248 to make sure that's accessible when we start running buses out there on a regular basis.
All right. Also, let's get an update with regard to the post office delivery. What's the update with gang boxes for mail delivery? That's basically what the post office has said the city has to provide.
That's correct. The city council discussed this matter last Thursday night, and there's some larger issues at stake, one of which is making sure the post office stays busy. If we take everybody in Old Town and send them to gang boxes, then they won't go to the post office and see their neighbors. So that's the larger discussion going on. We're still moving forward, seeing where we could put gang boxes. The other big question is who's going to pay for them? So they're not cheap. If we do them in our classic historic style, they're definitely not cheap. So we're working on that issue going forward.
And what about the space for them?
We think there's a couple of places we could put them. They're not, if we do them small, they're not going to be a big problem. If we do 50, 60 boxes at a time, they're going to be a problem.
What are we looking at? What's those areas?
Oh, I still think I like your suggestion down by the library for some. We've got some others up here because we still have the rights of way along our stairways. We just don't want to lose any more parking spaces on those narrow streets.
Okay. So you're going to come back with a plan for these?
Or at least more discussion direction from the city council. This is a little bit of a policy question for the council, and we're going to have to get them some more facts.
All right. And then we're talking about just the area north of Heber Avenue, right? I mean, anybody south of Heber Avenue still gets
No. South of Heber as well. It's the entire historic district is what we're looking at.
Oh, okay. I thought they were still offering a deal for those living south.
No. Especially if it appears that you may not be a full-time homeowner up in this district. That's one of the criteria is you get one free mail delivery at your primary residence. In some cases, we're noting some errors in that, and these are some long-time, old-line, historic district residents that are having to pay for their boxes now.
Okay. The Pizza Hut, that was supposed to get torn down. I guess I haven't driven by. Did it happen?
It's gone.
It's gone.
All right, so what's taking its place?
Go ahead, Kirsten.
Oh, well, the Intermountain Healthcare Clinic, the one that's moving out of the Bonanza area, Bonanza Park, is they're proposing a new clinic there. It's an allowed use in the zone, and it's about, I think it's about 8,000 square feet, one single story, and then there's an underground parking garage that they're going to be putting in.
But so, they just needed more room than from
I believe
Bonanza?
That, exactly, yeah. You know, more room, a little more updated and with additional amenities.
Yeah. I remember the concern when we built the one on Bonanza was the ambulance kind of turnout. Would there be also an ambulance?
There is not an ambulance turnout on that one. There's a place where it comes – there is an area where an ambulance can come in. But then they'd have to back out, so it doesn't make a circulation.
And those ambulances would tend to go to the hospital then instead of the clinic anyway?
I think that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So what about the approvals for that clinic? Do you have an application? And
we have a building permit application. We did see an administrative conditional use permit for the retaining wall that would be along Sidewinder, sort of across from the 7-Eleven there. It's, and that is a requirement for a retaining wall over 6 feet in height that has to have an administrative conditional use. That's simply just to retain the driveway as it goes down under the building. And so it's not an above-ground retaining wall, but you know, it's visible from the driveway side. And we took care of that in December and put out all the notices, and that's been approved.
Okay. Bruce, any updates with regard to some new ordinances for helicopter landings?
No. Actually, our ordinances are in place. What helicopter folks need to do is take a look at the ordinances and make an application. We did review the locations where these would be conditional uses, and the public would be notified. They're at both of our resorts. That has the correct zoning, and the general commercial zone, which would be Prospector and Bonanza Park. But nobody's come forward with an application, and there's certainly going to be public input into that.
Okay. And then also, Kirsten wanted to ask you about an agenda item, the Empire Pass area. We're talking about an additional 27 residential units being built there?
Yes, that's correct, at 8910 Empire Club Drive. So this is lot 15 of the Village at Empire Pass Master Plan Development, and that was that series of larger lodge buildings, as Silver Strike and Grand Lodge and a couple other ones up there. And 27 residential units, they're fairly large. It's a fairly large building. I think the total building square footage with all the circulation and then parking garage and everything is about 113,000 square feet. But it does have a single-level parking garage underneath. There's no commercial. It's just 27 units. And then the common areas like the recreation, ski lockers and that type of thing.
My understanding was that it needed a conditional use permit. How come? It's not approved as part of the Flagstaff annexation?
So all of the individual specific site plan reviews are done with a conditional use permit as part of the Flagstaff. So there was a Flagstaff annexation agreement, and then there was a subset of that, which was the Village at Empire Pass, which was a couple of the pods of the Flagstaff. And then within that, every building or area then requires also a conditional use permit.
All right. And how built out is that area? I mean, are we approaching the end of this?
Yeah, I think there are, from my research, and I did the unit equivalents, because there's a pot of unit equivalents that they get to use. It's not that they have to meet so many on this site. But there are, I think, three more of these large buildings. There's Empire Tower Club Residential, then two other sites. And then there's a few townhouse-type units and a few of the PUD-style units, and then the second phase of Montage. So there's a pod B2, which is the Montage is on the west side, and then there's an east side. And I don't remember exactly how many units that is, but it's not as many as the Montage. And then then the single-family that are being built at Red Cloud. And then that's pretty much it.
Yeah. What about the affordable housing? That's already been taken care of then?
They have affordable housing requirements every 150 unit equivalents, or units, I think it is, and they're past the 300, so the next one kicks in a little while. But although this particular building, they are providing one significantly large ADA unit and also a affordable housing unit.
And her job all in one was really a great way to contribute.
It's 8:49, and in the studio with me now to tell us more about tomorrow's free Lunch and Learn, I have Dondi Sherlikes along with guest chocolatier Phyllis Robinson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having us. I'm here to invite the community to our free lunchtime learning tomorrow from 12 to 1 p.m. at the Mark, and to introduce our guest speaker, Phyllis Robinson, chocolatier, who's going to be talking to us about decoding chocolate.
Mm. So we've talked a little bit about it. I mean, there's lots of ways to make chocolate, huh?
There is, and I thought with Valentine's Day right around the corner, that would be a great time to have a little conversation at our Lunch and Learn tomorrow about what is it you're buying and what is it you're eating, and kind of understanding the difference between something that says that it's chocolate and something that's chocolate-flavored. What is vanilla versus vanillin? artificial flavors, and none of which are bad. It's all about our personal tastes, but just to understand kind of what's in the box that you're buying, and when you're looking at something and saying, wow, that's only $12. I'm going to buy that 14-pound box of chocolate. Turning it over, reading the labels, understanding what you're buying for that, you know, for your $12, 14-pound piece of box of chocolate.
Yeah. So, I mean, as somebody who makes the chocolate, I mean, what are you buying? You're buying the beans?
So I am not a chocolate maker. I buy the chocolate that's been produced. So Ritual Chocolate is a chocolate maker. They do the beans. They do the roasting. They do a beautiful job with roasting and really teasing out all the flavors from chocolate. So I start with the chocolate. Mm. And then I move from there, making the confections, making the bonbons and the ganaches and the truffles and all those fun things that feel really good on your mouth when you bite into it. Adding the creams and the butters and the flavors. But
you're pretty picky about the chocolate that you start with.
I am extremely picky about the chocolate that I start with. I've had great experiences to be able to, you know, spend time in Europe tasting chocolates with some of the best chocolate houses. I'm very particular in terms of that our chocolate is fair trade, ethically sourced. I want to know where it came from, and I want to know that the people who are taking care of the cacao trees and who are harvesting the chocolate, that they are being paid fair wages and being ethically treated. And those pieces are really important to me, and the same thing with our ingredients. You know, when they can be locally sourced, when they can be organic, those are all pieces that go into, for me, what goes into a superb piece of chocolate.
Okay, so I find this interesting, though. I mean, you've brought Phyllis in for the February, and of course, Valentine's Day. What does chocolate and Valentine's Day have to do with it? Other than, I mean, that's kind of like the traditional thing is giving somebody a box of chocolate, yeah.
Chocolate and flowers. I mean, what better way to woo someone?
Well, we're going to woo you because Tandem Chocolates has offered a pound of chocolate. Let's ask for a $50 pledge,
sure.
Right? It's retail value.
It's for your Valentine. It is a beautiful velvet plush heart box, big ribbon on it. It's, you know, if you haven't bought your chocolate gift yet, this will be it. It'll be freshly made for Friday.
Okay, so somebody can come by because you've got your retail office at near the Park Record
Correct.
Building. Right. Again, a $50 pledge, they'll get a pound of chocolate. And what would be something they would find inside that?
So it'll be a lovely assortment of pieces. One of my favorite things I'm working with right now is passion fruit. So we have a passion fruit ganache, which is sweet and sour and tart and all those wonderful flavors on your tongue. I've been doing some teas, so some jasmine teas and Earl Grey teas and lovely caramels. I have a mango caramel. In fact, I have a box here that I'm leaving with you today that has some espresso crunch. It has some caramelized cacao nibs in it. So it'll be an assortment. If whomever purchases it, if there's an allergy, please give me a call. Let me know. We'll make sure we don't put any of that in your box.
Okay. Again, 649-9004 for a pound of Tandem Chocolates for Valentine's Day. Again, you can pick it up by Friday, but Phyllis will be at the Lunch and Learn tomorrow, noon to 1 p.m. at the PC Mart. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks.
Hope to see everyone tomorrow.
It's 8:54. Also in the studio with me, the Park City Professional Arts Association hosting its annual show this weekend. And in the studio with us, we have one of the artists presenting is Lisa Carlson. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie. How's it going?
Good. So when, where, and how much are we doing?
12 local artists from Park City Arts Association are going to be showing their work at Art Elevated, Art Show and Sale at the Park City Visitors Information Center at Kimball Junction. And we have a free opening reception from 3 to 6 on Friday. And then we continue Saturday, 9 to 6. And then Sunday, February 14th, 9 to 3. Last year, we did the Monday on President's Day, but we decided not to do that because everybody was out playing around and skiing and all kinds of stuff. And it is the 7th Art Elevated event held there since it opened in 2013.
All right. How many artists are you going to have?
There are 12 of us.
Okay.
And you'll find paintings, photographs, jewelry, sculpture, and all of the artists will be on hand throughout the event so you can talk to them and kind of explore what everybody's doing recently.
Yeah, and so it's something that you have to be a member of the association to participate in.
It pretty much works that way, yeah. It's put on by the Summit County Art Council as an event supporting that, and then the Part C artists get to be a part of it.
All right. So who decides who gets to show?
Well, it's basically a group of people that are really actively pursuing the show. So we fill it up really quickly. So we'd like to have more, but the space is so restrictive that we only get to have 12.
All right. And you'll have some of your work there?
Yeah, it'll be fun. It's hard to find my work, so it's always lovely to be able to show in Park City since, of course, I sell nationwide and I'm always somewhere. We just got back from Palm Springs, had a great show down there. However, we almost blew away in the typhoon of about 70 miles an hour, which was quite trippy. So it'll be nice to be in an indoor venue.
Okay.
You know.
And again, it's free, yeah?
It's free. And it's, again, at the Park City Visitor Center, right in the Hugo Coffee space right there.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to let us know?
No, that's it. But good luck with your pledge. You guys are doing great with all the festivities in here. It's really colorful. Love it.
Thanks,
Lisa. Thanks again, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:56.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory the Ranch Club and Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.